So has anyone seen New York Times today? So the front page of New York Times had this article called "We Have Finally Met the Enemy and It's a PowerPoint." and so apparently General Petraeus, I think, so he was shown during some military briefing this particular slide among various other things, and then he looked at the slide and said, by the time we understand this slide, we would have won the war. Okay, and in fact, it's a very interesting article, and it points out how much of the time is spent by military brass in making PowerPoint slides as against actually fighting. Of course, top brass don't fight anyway. I thought this is useful for graduate students, especially because I find at least the ones that I know spend tons and tons and tons of time making great slides. And then the thing that you have to remember is when you stand in front of the slides, people are not looking at the slides, they're looking at you. So it would probably make more sense to make the slides simpler, at least simpler than this. Unless you try this, which is somebody apparently said that in that same article, these types of PowerPoint presentations, Dr. Han said, are known as hypnotizing chickens. So you show these kinds of slides, and I'm hoping I've done this during the semester, that I hypnotize you, whether you call yourself chickens or not. And they apparently show this in the press briefings so that people would not ask any questions. You know, obviously this is complicated stuff. You can't ask questions about this. How many of you have seen, as long as I'm on this topic, how many of you have seen the Gettysburg speech, which actually it turns out that Abraham Lincoln did have PowerPoint slides. He forgot to bring them to the Gettysburg. I mean, I'm assuming that some of you know what Gettysburg speech is. So anyway, these are the this is the PowerPoint version of the Gettysburg speech, and obviously Abraham Lincoln, the agenda, and you know, again, as I said in the Royal Shakespeare Company, the more you know the original, the funnier this gets. So that's the agenda apparently. And then what's not on the agenda is dedicate and consecrate. And I love this because every PowerPoint slide requires a good plot. And so this one is, how many of you know the beginning? 84 and 7 years ago. So between 87 years back, before 87 years, a nation came into existence. So there's a 0.1 nation, 0.2 nation, all the way up to one nation. And now we are worried whether or not that nation would actually survive. So it became zero. And then he summarizes. So the interesting thing about this is those of you who know Peter Narvig, he's the co-author of the AI textbook with Stuart Russell. So Peter Narvig, many years back, this is about 10 years back, he's now the he's the director of research at Google. So 10, 15 years back, he was sick and tired of PowerPoint presentations everywhere. And then so he made this up. What would have Gettysburg address look like if Lincoln were to have used PowerPoint presentation? And so if you say Lincoln PowerPoint, you'll get this as the top hit on his page, actually. So this, now of course, New York Times caught on to this 15 years later. Anyway, so we are at the home stretch. We just have what? Three total, including today, three classes. The one thing that I'm going to send you a mail, but you should remember is that by the last class, which would be next Tuesday, okay, I don't think there's going to be any formal fourth homework that you would be required to submit. I might give you questions as well as answers, okay, because there's not enough time to collect them and grade them. But there is one question which you would have to complete, and that would be the interactive review. So basically, on the blog, I mean, each of you would write a summary of top few things that you got out of the course, okay? And this is content, technical stuff, not feedback on the course. Feedback on the course you get to do as part of the college evaluations. Okay, so if you were to write down what you remember by the end of the course, which is pretty much this last week, then a compilation of that on the blog would be essentially the summary of the course. So that's what actually got through, as against what I thought got through. Okay, so it would be a good exercise for all of you. When you do it, write your comment yourself. You know, don't look at other people. I mean, although I can't stop it, you know, and don't say the same as the other guy. You know, just think about what you thought you got out of the overall course in terms of either connecting themes or a couple of techniques that you thought were particularly useful for you. And then, you know, you summarize them. So I can make 8 ideas and say this is the summary of the course, but that would be my summary of the course. So you get to do your own. So this is one thing that you would do by next Tuesday. So I'll just send a mail that will get onto the blog, and then as a comment on that blog posting, you would post this. Okay? Yes? It doesn't have to, no, if it is as long as the course, then it's not a summary. So I would say in the past, it could be anywhere between 10 to 50, 60 lines, let's say. Okay. I mean, there is a way of looking at what other people got out. You know, this has been done for my courses in the past too. I'm reluctant to give you that comment, I mean that link, myself, because that looks like I'm encouraging you to say exactly what the other people got out of the course. Okay. But based on that, you know, people just wrote anywhere between 10 to 50, 60 lines. You know, it doesn't have to be multiple pages long. Okay? Any other question? Anything else on that? Everything for this course will be due next Tuesday. Yeah. And then I will also get you the sign up for the demo schedule. No, right after next Tuesday.
Right after.
Yeah. I think next week sometime. I mean, I think I need to talk to the TA. Yes?
You have a list of May 4th, but is it going to be May 4th or is it like a week May 4th?
Which one?
For the demonstration.
It's the week off. I think he will set up, I mean, he'll look at his time and then he'll make a bunch of slots, and then I'll bring it hopefully to the next class or at the latest to the very last class, and then you sign up. Or I can ask him to just set it up somewhere on the Doodle, you know, Moodle or Doodle, and then you can set up there too, whichever way is easier. Okay. Any other questions? Yes?
So
we are not worried about final exam. You will have a final exam.
It's Tuesday the 11th.
That would be too nice if you don't have a final exam, right? So no homework, no exam, and that would not be good. No, because everything that was done in the end of the after the midterm, we haven't had a chance to. I mean, I think of exams, I mean, whatever you might think of, I think of the exams as you're forced to look at the whole thing once and keep it in your head for at least a few microseconds before you flush it out and make room for whatever else you want to make room for. Okay. So yes, there will be an exam. Yes.
So will the final be comprehensive?
It will be comprehensive, but with emphasis on the second part of the semester. Any other questions? Okay. So what I was doing at the end of last class is looking at XML from the point of view of IR, and then we talked about the fact that so we were looking at how you could support keyword queries on XML, right? How you could support keyword queries on XML, and we spent a bunch of time talking about how we can what would be the queries. The queries can be essentially path expressions, which as a special case include just the normal queries. And we also talked about results now would be like some way a subpart of the XML tree, because remember each XML document can be seen as a tree. So results would be the smallest subtree that includes the path expression, the query. Okay. And then we also looked at the fact that indexing essentially has to now take into account. So for example, in this example, if you have a tree like this, and if I am going to ask for just a Microsoft as a keyword that occurs anywhere, then I could use the normal inverted index, which says Microsoft occurs in this document. But now if I'm asking Microsoft occurring under title, right? That's the keyword query I'm using, okay? So then it's not enough to just know that Microsoft occurs in a document, but I want to know all the documents in which under the title tag, Microsoft occurs, okay? So you would wind up having to essentially index not single words, so Microsoft, Bill, and Gates would be indexed, so that if in fact you're searching for .. Microsoft, then that particular, these things will essentially be caught, and then you'll realize that these words exist somewhere in this document, okay? You would also index title Microsoft. That basically means it's a version of Microsoft which occurs under title. And so if your query is looking for title Microsoft, then this will be helpful in figuring out which subset of the document contain that. And similarly, you would do the author Bill, author Gates, book title Microsoft, book title Microsoft. Okay? So you are increasing the size of the inverted index. This was the last thing I was saying at the end of last class. You're increasing the size of the inverted index so that you can efficiently support queries which say, for example, give me all the documents where Microsoft is occurring under title, or give me all the documents where Microsoft is occurring under book. Yes? What you do is this. You would each path to a word would be separately indexed.
So my question is that this whole path which are
getting
is deterministic or non-deterministic?
No, I am keeping each of the paths in this. Okay, book title Microsoft, book author Bill, book author Gates, title Microsoft, author Bill, author Gates. All of those would be indexed. Okay?
This is already indexed.
Yes. And then you would have to use this inverted this index in supporting path queries. By the way, one top level comment is for today's, I mean starting pretty much last class, I am not going to be able to go into all the details of actually how to support querying on XML using path expressions. What I'm trying to do is to get you a feel for what IR people will do, given what you already know about vector space ranking. You know, if you were to sit down and reinvent, retrieval for XML trees, what would you do? And these are some of the important issues. You would have to essentially support path queries. You have to support result snippets. You have to support indexing, which has to be expanded. If you do not expand, then it'll still work. It just will be very inefficient because there may be many, many, many documents where the word Microsoft occurs. But if I'm asking for all those documents where it occurs under title, then I need a subset of those documents. And the whole point of inverted index is you do extra work before the query is submitted so that when the query is submitted, you are lightning fast. Okay. By the way, so this area, which is supporting XML querying, the person here in ASU who does a lot of the work in this is Yi Chen, Professor Chen. Her group is into supporting keyword queries on XML, okay, as a research. And then And I think she teaches a course, either she taught this semester, no, this semester she didn't, but next semester she might teach. She teaches a graduate level course on XML and semi-structured databases. And so this is sort of an overview of the kinds of things you can, you know, spend time learning there. Okay. Again, there's a lot more details that I can get into if I'm interested in a very specific implementation, but my interest is to get you to see what an IR guy would do if they're trying to support the keyword style querying on XML. Okay? Having done that, the next thing I want to do is what would a database guy do if they're trying to support querying on XML. Okay, again, this too is part of this is I think supported in Yichen's course, part is probably in Selchuk's course. Selchuk Jandan teaches a advanced database course. But again, it's connected to the motives of our course, because remember we said XML, you get to XML either from IR by adding more structure or from databases by reducing structure. Okay, so if you are supporting querying on XML, so remember IR guys will try to do keyword queries. Normally that's what they were doing. And so they considered path expressions, which basically are keywords with a context and the path in which those keywords are occurring. Okay, now database guys normally support SQL style querying, select, project, join queries. Okay, so they look at XML essentially as a verbose description of a data of a bunch of database records, and they want to support. So keep the IR guys will at least want to support keywords queries, and they may want to support more structured queries. Database guys would at least want to support select, project, join queries, and maybe more. Okay. So what database guys did essentially, and in fact to some extent to combine both of these, you essentially have this standard called XQuery, much of which really was pushed by database guys, and it does look like more like a big SQL standard. Okay, so we'll look a little bit at XQuery. XQuery has that big a manual, and you can write pretty much every kind of query which, you know, every kind of SQL query plus SQL queries that include keyword queries in them. Okay. Once again, my interest is to get you to understand that such a standard exists and how it connects to what we have discussed here. Okay. So from a database point of view, you want to think about what's the data model. Like, you know, relational databases, the data model is basically tables. Okay, for XML, the data model is essentially the DOM tree. It's a tree with tags and the data. This much we knew. Okay, one other thing about databases is schema. Until now, we didn't make schema a direct part. So in fact, IR guys did not require a schema for the XML. Okay, they were just say, if I ask for title Microsoft, okay, then if in fact some other document has book name Microsoft, one can argue that title and book name are the same. And so if you are looking for title Microsoft, you should also return records which have book name Microsoft. Okay, IR query wouldn't support that. Basically, they will only be looking for title, dot, 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 and Microsoft. Okay? And so they were not essentially considering any required schema. Now, database guys would like to talk about a schema because you would want to say that there's a structure to your table of tuples. Okay? So now we need like a standard for talking about XML schema. Okay, and then because we need a standard if you're going to use it. If you're not going to use it, why do we need to standardize? Okay, yes?
Can that kind of XML conversion helpful in the big tables in the database?
The big tables in the Google big tables kind of a thing? That's a different question. It's more of a engineering question. We'll talk about that. It's not connected directly for this. So So here, suppose I have, let's say, remember that I said if I have a table, a relational table, remember with the student, which has a bunch of columns saying name, ID, posting ID, and GPA, etc. This and the tuples in this table can be written down essentially as an XML file. Start with student record, and then the name of the student, and then dot slash name, and then the ID slash ID, PID, GPA, etc. And then one student record is over, you end that, you start the next student record. Okay, so XML file will now be a set of student records. And each student record essentially has the same schema, so it has the same exact columns. Okay, so suppose I have an XML paper, like XML document like this, which essentially says paper, which has a section, and it has some text, and then the section ends, then one more section, then title of the section, title ends, and so on. Okay, so it's like sort of a XML document for some normal paper, which have sections and titles and so on. Now, a schema is essentially going to say, before you even open the file, what fields are likely to be in that XML file. That's what the schema should tell you. Okay? The original standard for XML schemas was DTDs, Document Type Definition Language, which sort of essentially, here is an example for this one. It says the document type is paper, and it has the following elements: paper, section, title, text. And paper essentially has some number of sections, zero or more sections. Section has a title, and another section are just text. This is a subsectioning. Title is PC data, is a type of basically it's parsed character data. That means that's just character. You don't know anything more than that. And then text is also PC data. Okay? So before you, this is sort of basically like saying section eventually contains PC data, which you don't know what it means unless you do NLP. But before it gets there, it would go through some structured fields like title and section. You can actually write a DTD like this for an email too, right? An email message is likely to have a from and a to. It may have a CC. It will probably always have a subject, and then it has body, right? So that's a schema for an email. If I send you something and say, do you think this is an email? You can look at it and say, it doesn't look like it has the right format. Okay, so an XML DTD essentially is giving the format of the XML document. And now again, the fact that paper eventually goes down to text whose format we don't necessarily know. It's just parsed character data. And the fact that paper can have any number of sections. It can have zero sections, one section, or 25 sections. This is also an interesting distinction from normal database style tables, where each table will have a fixed width. So if you were to write, so if I have this this kind of a standard, right, you converted this database table into an XML file, right, you can then provide for that XML file a DTD. The interesting thing is in such a DTD, there will never be a clean star. Right? Because you know exactly that each tuple will have one name, one ID, one PID, one GPA. That's it. It's a fixed width tuple. The fact that I'm allowing star means, in essence, I am saying my schema is a union of many finite size schemas, finite size tuples. Okay, so the very fact that if DTD allows this means if databases were to support this kind of data, they would be reducing their stringent requirements on structure. You're saying now, for example, if a book can have multiple authors and you don't quite know how many authors a book can have, if you are pushed into putting it into a fixed width table, then you must have one column called authors. And then you put all the authors into that column. It's either one or two or etc. On the other hand, with DTD, you can say author is a star. So that means you can have multiple authors, and each author will have the following format, first name, last name. Okay, so when from a database side I say XML allows you to reduce the requirements on structure, that's like saying my table can actually be either this wide or this wide or this wide. I don't need to tell you. And then I'm getting some tuples from this table, some from this table, some from this table. And I'm putting them all in the same file. Okay, now supporting database style queries on that kind of a data is an interesting extension of normal database querying technology, because that always works on fixed tables. Now, one interesting thing actually is, you know, I kind of explained DTD, but it sort of more or less is on the way out, unless it's, you know, probably very few people directly use DTD anymore for XML schema, because to the extent XML is a universal syntactic standard, the schema for XML should also be in XML syntax, don't you think? If somebody comes and says English is a universal language, and then you will say, okay, describe the grammar of English, and they start describing it in French, then you know English is not a universal language. It can't even describe its own grammar in its language. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so it's kind of a silly thing to have XML be a universal syntactic standard where, you know, everything can be converted into tag structure, and yet this is not XML. Okay, so people realized this and then essentially came up with XML schema, which is a way more verbose standard, but it is in XML, and I'll mention it here mostly so you know that in fact XML schema can be defined in, just as English grammar can be written down in English, okay? XML schema can be defined in an XML syntax, okay? So for example, here is an XML base file. This is a bunch of purchase orders, okay? And then here is an XML schema for this XML file. So both the DTD and XML schema, essentially, the way you're supposed to use them is if you have an XML file, okay, at the top you put a URL to the schema of the file. And then whoever is reading this XML file can check whether or not this file is actually following the schema that is written in the schema language. Okay, and furthermore, they have an expectation as to which fields are to be expected under each record, because the schema tells them so. Okay, so, you know, previously you would just give a link to the DTD. Now you can actually, now this is not so much now, it's been, XML schema has been in the works for like many, many years now already. And so basically you can just put a link to the XML schema, which itself is an XML file, but that's sitting somewhere else. And so whenever you are making a purchase order, a bunch of purchase orders in XML, you put a link saying this is the schema I am following. This is the schema I am following. And the schema essentially tells the machine which tries to parse this, whether or not, of course, any machine can see where the tag is beginning, where the tag is ending. What a machine can't see is whether or not a purchase order is supposed to have a customer name. If it isn't, then it can tell you, hey, you forgot to enter the customer name when you wrote a purchase order. Okay, that's the whole point of schema. So somebody who knows what is supposed to go in, they can tell you, hey, you're missing some fields. Okay, so in this case, essentially, it says, this particular one says, you know, by the way, XSD, complex type, name, purchase order. This is essentially, XSD is the namespace, XML schema definition. Okay, so all the names here, complex type, can also be used here, but this is XSD colon complex type. So this name would not conflict with the same name somewhere else. Okay? So all the schema parts will have XSD colon. That's the namespaces we talked about previously. And it's now defining the structure of the purchase order. And all this is saying is the purchase order will have as a sequence the ship to, the bill to, the comment, and the items. And if they don't, then purchase order is not grammatically correct. Now notice that a purchase order can be grammatically correct and semantically incorrect. Think of a purchase order as I'm here. Think of a purchase order which would be grammatically correct and semantically incorrect. That is fine, but they could have actually stopped that. So for example, ship 2 it must be a US address. Bill 2 must be a US address. Items must be defined as items. Okay, so the basic idea is the address that you wrote may not actually exist. So you can't actually ship the item there. It has the syntax of an address. Okay, but may not exist. So when it actually goes to the post office, they'll say we can't deliver this because this address doesn't exist. So that's the semantic aspect. But if the address doesn't even look syntactically correct, then you are in bigger trouble. It's the first time. Okay. So anyway, you have for a US address now. So this has been. So this is actually defining a type definition language in essence, right? So it defined the type purchase order, and which is using the type US address, and then the US address is defined here. US address must have a name, a street, a city, a state, and a zip. Okay, now all of these are strings. What that means is I can make up any random name, any random street, any random city, as long as it's a string, it would be considered a US address according to this schema. But it may not actually exist. It could be a lunar address for all I care. Do you see what I'm saying? So being grammatically wrong and syntactically right and semantically right are two completely different things. Schema is trying to capture syntactic rightness. Okay, and furthermore, notice that one advantage of this entire web essentially is you can put hypertext links from your XML file to the schema file. And the schema file itself basically can actually put links to other schema files on which it's being built. So there is a type hierarchy going on. So here I wound up writing US address here. You could have actually put a link to another schema file which actually defines US addresses. So that if multiple files wind up requiring US address type, they can all just use that. So there's a natural way of sort of building schemas, you know, and then putting in some library so that people can use them. So that's the advantage. Okay. So the other thing, of course, is now the schema is in the same form as XML. Okay. So the question is, if you know you had relational tables and they had schema, XML files now have schema. The schema tells you which parts we know for sure will exist and what their types would be, and which parts may not exist, and which parts would be a parsed character data, and which at most you can only do IR style query. So this makes you say, why can't we support something that is a superset of SQL on one side, which does essentially, you know, the select project join style queries, and IR style keyword querying on the other side. Combine both of them into one standard. And that's essentially what XQuery does. Okay? It's a large standard. In fact, if you go here, you can play with XQuery. I might actually give that as one of the, you know, homework problems that you can try, you know, although we won't have time to actually make it submittable. But you have essentially some queries that would be run on an existing database, and then the results will be given out. Okay, so you can try writing XQuery queries. Okay, the XQuery queries essentially, so we'll say a little bit about the syntax of XQuery queries, just to get you to believe that you could possibly do something like database style querying using XQuery. Just as previously I said, you could do something like IR style querying using path expression, you know, but more. Okay? So here, XQuery essentially has this flower expressions for, let, where, return, and the interesting part is the let allows you to define local variables for the query. Okay. For binds the variables, and where basically does the constraints. Certain constraints have to be satisfied before you return the results. Okay, the selection constraints, for example. And then the return is a very interesting thing in XML, because while you are returning, you can construct the syntactic shape of the result. In normal SQL, what do you do in normal SQL? Again, I'm assuming that most of you, either new databases or you at least read the beginner's guide to databases that I asked you to do, okay? So in normal SQL, you will say select, from where? Okay, select some records, from certain tables where certain constraints are satisfied by those records, right? And those are the select, project, join queries. The where can, if you have multiple tables and you have constraints over multiple tables, then you are saying where, for example, the ID of the student in the student database is the same as the ID of the tuple in the GPA database, so that you can read off the student's GPA, for example. Okay, now having done this, you just select and then you just write down those columns. That's all you do in databases. Okay, in XML, you can change their format completely. You can, for example, say the name of the student should come out with slash B begin, the name slash B end. And if that happens, then essentially you converted the student name into an HTML format where the name becomes emboldened, in print. Okay? So one interesting thing in terms of XQuery, when seen from the glasses of SQL, is you can do very complex result construction. So in normal SQL, the moment you got all the tuples that are relevant and the particular columns from those tuples that need to be sent out, you're done. You just send them out. Here now, you can then do some complex construction on them and put them in the right format that you care about and then send it out. Okay? Let's look at it. Okay, so XQuery, if you are coming to it from SQL, you should look at the either XQuery manual or play with this to get use cases. If you click on that, it will show you all the possible types of queries that you can that are supported in XQuery, and the different queries correspond to normal SQL style queries, path expression style queries, keyword comparison queries, combination queries, sequence queries. Remember, XML can allow sequences too, so you can just say, give me the element where, give me all the elements where the fourth sub-element has the following string. Okay? All those are supported in the XQuery standard. So if you look at it from the SQL, it supports pretty much all the SQL style queries. This is for sure. So if you were to take your database, write it out as an XML form, into an XML form, then any SQL query that somebody could have written on your database can still be written as an XQuery query, and you'll get the result. So there is no loss of information when you translated it into XML. Okay? The other interesting things, of course, beyond that, it also has extra support for construction, which I've been mentioning. The results that you give out can be put in any particular format you want. Okay, this makes a bigger sense for XML because you can make up tag structure. Whereas for databases, all you can do is just pick the columns and give those results out. Okay, you can provide complex path expressions, the same kind of things that we discussed previously. And so since you have path expressions, you can say in the flower expression, remember in the flower expression is for, let, where, return. Okay, the for and the return is sort of, if you are trying to connect these to this, the return is select into SQL, okay? The where is the same as where. And the for and let are from, okay? And so the where is basically, normally you provide the constraints as to which tuples should be returned. You know, for example, you might say, give me all the car records where the price is greater than $1,500. That's a wear constraint. Okay? So now we can also use the path expressions and say, give me all the car databases where the number of owners for this car is more than, is less than 3. You know, you're buying a used car and there is this general feeling in the used car buying population that single owner owned cars are better than multiple owner owned cars, because apparently multiple owners may not have taken the car as well as a single owner. Okay, so you might want to know how many people owned this car before, and you might just want to get cars that have been owned by less than 3 people before. Okay, so now I can use the, I can do those as path expressions. So the constraints in the where in the flower expressions might involve path expression. Yes, sir. The keys basically will come through to the, well, you can't define it as far as I know. You can't define it. I have to check this, but I believe that you cannot necessarily declare that there are primary and foreign keys.
How
will
you join two tables?
Equality. Because in fact, once you go out of the structured databases, you know, in fact, you just say string equality. This string is equal to this string. And the query is essentially saying, if in fact the value in this column is equal to, for this tuple, is equal to the value in this other column for this tuple, then they can be joined. You'll see an example, okay? Again, in fact, defining things like primary keys, and even more, foreign keys, I would argue is actually contrary to the decentralized nature of web. Okay, to actually ensure that primary key, foreign key constraint holds between two different tables, a single database manager makes sure that it holds. Then if you know it holds, you can use it during query processing. We'll give you in a minute an example where, let's say, you're combining two different databases. Okay, and they may or may not have agreed upon specific keys up front.
So you can handle also the null.
Yeah. In a sense that it's significantly more general than the SQL. Let me complete the discussion. Okay. Once again, XQuery, depending on how much you are into understanding the full syntax of XQuery, you can spend anywhere between 5 to 15 classes just talking about the syntax. My idea here is to try and get you to understand that, you know, where to find, you know, what XQuery does. And also, I want to go beyond that to talk about how to combine sources. Okay? So it can support path expressions. It also supports simple text queries. These are the, by the way, this construction is the use case XMP. So if you go here, you know, if you click on this, this is an XMP subset of queries. And the XMP queries essentially show you some examples of how you can construct different kinds of output formats. Okay? And similarly, you can do use case sequence, which allows path expressions. The simple text queries are supported. And what's more interesting to some extent from a database point of view is it can allow queries on tag elements. Okay? Because in the XML, the tags and the data are together. The interior nodes essentially are just happen to be tags. Okay? In a database, for example, in a relational table, the tuple itself just has the tuple format. And the names of the columns are outside of the tuple. Okay? So for example, it becomes hard in most databases to say, suppose I have multiple writer columns for a book. Suppose I want to allow in a fixed width database, I want to support books with potentially multiple authors. Okay? Then one way you could do it is, this is writer 1, writer 2, etc., up to writer 3. So I'm supporting up to 3 writers for the book, 3 authors for the book. Okay, and if I don't have a third author, I'll just leave it null. It'll be a null value. Okay, and if it doesn't have a second author, I'll leave it as a null. Now, I would like to ask, give me all single authored books from this database. It's a reasonable question. You know, just as papers you ask, give me all single authored papers, you know, for this author. Similarly, I might want to ask, give me all single authored books, okay, which have been written by the following name. Now, doing that in a database, from a database side, becomes hard because the query now is asking about which columns have null values. Okay, whereas that becomes quite easy, it's just par for the course for XQuery because it doesn't differentiate between data and metadata. The whole thing is in one file. It becomes verbose because of that, because every tuple repeats its structure, saying, I am a student, my name is this, my first name is this, my last name is this, my GPA is this. And the next one again says, I am a student, my name is this, my first name is this, my last name is this, my GPA is this. Okay, so I can now ask, give me all the students who don't have last names, which actually is possible. Okay, and give me all the students who don't have GPAs. Don't have GPAs, not that they have less than, you know, 0.7 GPA. They don't have GPAs at all. Okay, and those kinds of queries are also supported in XQuery because essentially there is no difference between tags and data. Okay, so from SQL point of view, these are some of the things that XQuery does that are more than what SQL does. So by converting your database style data tuples into XML and making questions on it in XQuery, you are actually supporting more interesting queries than you could when it was in the native relational database style. Okay. So here are some example queries just to give you a feel for it. So here is a query which says, so suppose I have an XML file with the following DTD, you know, I mean, you can also have an XML schema for it, where basically it's a list of books, okay? It is a bibliography of all books. A book can have title and at least one author, at least one editor, at least one author or editor, and a publisher and a price, and so on. So there's the author will have a last and first name, editor will have last, first name affiliation, title is a parse character data, last name, first name, affiliation, all of these are strings essentially. Right? So now if I have, you know, a database of books like this, then an example query, for example, on this database of books might say, first of all, you know, so give me a query which, the query saying, give me all the books such that for each book in this XML file, books publisher, notice this is a path expression, the books publisher is equal to Edison Wesley, and the book's attribute year is greater than 1991. Remember, in XML you can have attributes, which would basically sort of unary predicates. Okay, attribute year is greater than 1991, and if you then get all those book records, then return those book records in the following way. You would construct for each such record, start with a book tag, put the year you got in the book's year as an attribute, and then below it just give me the title and then end the book. Notice that each book actually has lot more information, editor, author, publisher, and all that stuff. All I'm saying is, give me just the title. So I projected away other attributes. So in the return part of it, I also get to do, this is what I said, return, you know, part of it tells me what attributes I'm projecting out and what I'm ignoring. Plus, it also tells me how to put them, you know, what tag structure should I put them in. Okay? So, you know, if you run this on a database of books, you will get some output like this. You know, book year is 1994, title is this, and book ends, and then another book. This is the title, book ends, and this. So, nice thing is, when you run an XQuery on an XML file, based on the way you do the return, you can generate a new XML file. Okay? So, you can actually see that you can use this to also essentially do XSL style transformation, where for each book which is, you know, been published after 1991, you want to put their titles in bold, let's say. Then all you need to do is put a slash B, the title, and I mean B title and slash B. Okay, so this is a XMP use case where construction is being emphasized, but it also showed how you could put constraints. You could put constraints on path expressions. Okay, and it's also looking at where the data is. The data in this case is in some URL essentially. Okay, so you can provide the URL of the XML file. That's the nice thing. Okay. Here is an example query 2, which sort of is join style querying. Okay, so here return the books that cost more at Amazon than at FatBrains, which is one more book seller. You know, I don't even know whether FatBrains exists anymore. So here I'm using the let to, so the let Amazon be this document, this XML document, let FatBrains be this XML document. Now, of course, I'm being like wishful and thinking that Amazon will just give me entire XML of its books, books.xml, wow, come and take it. You know, obviously it doesn't do it, okay? If it did it, then I can do this, okay? Books.xml, FatBrains books.xml, and then for AM in Amazon Books book and for Fat in FatBrains books, where AM's is bin equal to Fat's is bin. Now, this is bin is essentially the key across the two tables. Okay, now they didn't necessarily either declare it, or nobody, and there's also nobody making sure that they're consistently using is bin numbers. I just hoped that, you know, since it's FatBrains and Amazon, they will hopefully use is bin numbers as the standard. Okay, so the ISBN numbers are equal, in which case I'll assume the books are equal. Okay, in a centrally managed database, when the ISBN numbers are equal, the books have to be equal. If it is across, if it's two different tables that you don't own, they could have put anything, they could have made any kinds of mistakes, and you really have no way of ensuring that, in fact, they consistently use the same key. Okay, but here I'm hoping that, you know, if the numbers are the same, if they are same, and the price number is greater than the FatBrains price, that means Amazon is charging more for this book, then return the title and the price and the FatBrains price for that book. Okay, again, in this simple thing that you should play with at least, there are about 50 different queries split into about 10 use cases. Okay, I just showed you two of them. Okay, this is in some sense a standard waiting for things to happen, like the center point condos right there. You know, I don't know, you guys look across the Mill Avenue, there's the center point condos that they built up, all 9 stories of it. It was waiting for people to start using them. Okay, XQuery is a standard waiting for people to start using it. And they have essentially thought of all sorts of possible uses. As far as I know, it's not like all of them are actually being exploited right now. But people did put a lot of work into it because it's a huge, big committee which made sure that both the IR people and XML people, you know, and database people would be happy and, you know, asking any kind of question. Okay. Furthermore, by the way, one question is whether or not order matters in the XML. And I mentioned this in the beginning. IR people would assume that the order matters. Database people assume order shouldn't matter. And since this standard is supposed to make both of them happy, essentially XQuery will allow you to define at the top, either at the query time, whether to look at the XML file as if order matters or as if order doesn't matter. And then you can, you know, essentially parse the query, evaluate the query as if the order matters or as if the order doesn't matter, depending on what the user wants. So that's the thing that they support right now. Okay, one last thing about XML is, this is something that I mentioned last time, which is now that XML is there, in fact, it's interestingly, XML caused a lot more frenzy in the database community than it did in the IR community, because IR people think you can always convert everything down to text and then just do keyword queries. And nobody really knows how to ask path expression queries in that little, you know, the query box anyway. And the people, you know, think about this. Who would be writing this kind of a query? I mean, how often do you get onto like some search engine and type this query out? Even if they support it. Most of you don't even use the advanced search options of the search engine. The advanced search options, by the way, mostly support things like proximity queries and path expressions. For example, you might say, give me all the documents where in the author field or in some particular field, you know, this particular word occurs. And we don't even use that. So IR guys are much more jaded. They think, you know, well, XML will come, we'll convert it all into text and support querying on that. Okay. Database guys, on the other hand, are very excited because, as I mentioned, they have been looking for a way to at least transfer data from one place to other and not lose the syntax. And now there is a verbose way, which is every tuple self-describes its structure. When every tuple self-describes its structure, then each tuple can have completely different structure. That's the nice thing about it. So for example, the first book has two authors, the second one has three authors, the third one has only one author, the fourth one has no price, the fifth one has no title. All of these are possible. Whereas in a database, if you are trying to put that all those books into one table, you need to find this one single schema into which all of these can be embedded. And which would either mean that you will put a whole bunch of extra columns which will become null for many of the tuples. Okay? Because if I have to support up to 9 authors, right, then each book will have up to 9 columns saying author 1, author 2, up to author 9, but most books only will have one author, so the author 2 to 9 would be null values. Either that, or you would say it authors field, and then all the author names will be put as text there. Okay, so either you lose structure or you put in too many null values if you are, you know, going from this side. So database people are generally happy that you can support this kind of a database as an XML file, and you can throw it out onto the web and people can catch this XML and do something with it. Okay, now I mentioned that one advantage of this now is everybody just, you know, I mentioned this lingua franca thing last class, right? If XML is a lingua franca, irrespective of whether you are into object-oriented databases or deductive databases or relational databases or Excel spreadsheets, you know, basically masquerading as databases, okay? All you need to do is put an XML XQuery front end. Okay, so it doesn't really matter. Remember that there was this saying that on the internet, nobody needs to know that you're a dog. Nobody would know that you're a dog. So on the internet, nobody needs to know that you're a relational database. They don't need to know that you're an object-oriented database. As long as you throw in an XML XQuery front end, and all the queries essentially are coming in XQuery, all the results are going out in XML, it doesn't matter what the back office guys are doing. Okay, so this was a big deal for database community, for a while at least. And so the idea is, the simple idea is that, you know, it's, you have to accept, to be able to do this, you have to accept XQuery. Okay, and then convert it into equivalent SQL queries, run it on the database, assume this is a relational database. Convert into equivalent SQL queries, run it on this database, then you will get some tuples. Then you need to tag those tuples with the structure of those tuples and throw it out as XML. If you do this, then nobody needs to know that you are not an XML database. And furthermore, if everybody agrees on XML as a standard, then suddenly you have one single way of sort of at least syntactically questioning, you know, querying every database. Okay, now this does not, by the way, take away this issue that different tags, I mean, the different databases might be using different tags. So for example, the XQuery might be saying, give me all the books whose writer is Rav, and this database thinks books have author field, not writer field. So in this particular case, you don't do anything. When it converts into SQL, it'll get zero tuples out because there are no writers for its books. And so you just send it out. Okay. All I'm saying is at least I will be supporting the same syntax for sending out the results and same support syntax for accepting the queries. Of these, sending out results in XML form is pretty much simple, right? I mean, if I'm getting a bunch of tuples, all of which have, in my select project join, in the selection part of SQL, it said, get me the cars make, cars model, cars price from this complex join query. Okay, so now each of these tuples have three fields, make, model, price. So I just, for each tuple, I put begin make, the name of the make, begin end make, begin model, end model, begin price, end price. Done. Okay, now of course, if you're a database person, you would say, well, yeah, you could do that for one tuple, but what if I have a billion tuples just coming out very fast? How fast am I going to tag them? And believe it or not, even though tagging is easy, there are papers written on tagging fast when the data is flowing out. You know, and I have to kind of make this point here that I normally, my daytime job is AI, okay? And there's this point that most of the footnotes in AI papers becomes full papers in databases, in the sense the details that are ignored in the AI become actually important issues to deal with in making, you know, scale up happen in some databases. So when I say tagging is easy, I'm using my AI way of looking at the world. If it's not NP-hard, why bother wasting time, okay? And tagging is indeed easy into my way of looking at it. But if a billion documents all need to be, I mean, billion tuples need to be tagged very fast, there could be better and, you know, clever and non-clever ways of doing it. And so there are some papers written on that. The more interesting question is, given an X query, can I convert into an SQL? Will I always be able to convert into an SQL? Okay, so think about the following thing. Suppose instead of XML, we have decided to, you know, we all emigrated to Upper Alaska and decided to hang around along with Eskimos. Okay, and we can't learn the Tlingit. I mean, we still want to think in English or Hindi or Telugu, but want to kind of interact with the Eskimos. So we'll put, instead of XQuery XML, we'll put Tlingit. What is the Eskimo language? Eskimo language front end. Okay? So the Eskimos will ask questions in Eskimo language. We will quickly translate it into English or Hindi or something, and then answer the question, put it back into Eskimo language. Looks like it's a reasonable idea. Okay? Can you think of questions that Eskimos can ask, which you would not even know what to do with them, even though you know how to translate, maybe? For example, it's been told, I mean, I don't know how many natural language processing courses you've taken, but it's been told that there are 32 different words for ice and snow in Eskimos language. In Peddapuram, where I was born, there was one word, and we used to see ice maybe every once a year when some guy goes and shows me a big, you know, block of ice. Maybe on the East Coast, they have four words for ice, okay? Eskimos, on the other hand, their entire life is ice and snow. So they have 32 different words. So they can make a nice little query about, do you differentiate between Thursday's ice, which had this XYZ form, and Saturday's ice, which has, you know, WMQ form, and you translate it into English and say, what? What do I do with this? I have no semantics for that, okay? So the interesting question is, just because I put in a front end doesn't mean I will be able to convert the query losslessly into my language query. In particular, so now the question is Eskimos and XML. I mean, is there any connection? Are there, for example, XQuery queries that cannot be easily translated into SQL? In particular, the simplest question is there a one-to-one correspondence between XQuery queries and XML queries? So Q1 XQuery, will it become Q1 SQL? So each XQuery query becomes one SQL query. You just need to find which one it is and then run it. Okay? And it turns out the answer is no. In general, a single XQuery query might correspond to a set of SQL queries. a set of SQL queries. Okay, and in particular, for example, and actually computing the right set of SQL queries might actually become hard, because XQuery, as I told you, can say, give me all the books which have only one author, which now needs to be translated into an SQL query, which needs to see whether there are certain number of null values in the writer fields, in the author fields. It must have author 1, but not author 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 9. Then only I can say this only has one author. Do you understand what I'm saying? So because you have queries which might be essentially querying the schema itself, XQuery query is querying the schema. It's not just saying, give me the tuples whose price is greater than 25. It's saying, give me the tuples which has only one writer column. So the rest of the writer columns are null. Since schema querying is possible, XQuery to SQL translation becomes tricky. Okay? So there are more interesting papers on this as to how to convert XQuery into SQL. And some of them are lossy, some of them are lossless. But you know, and how to quickly convert it, and then of course how to tag the information and put it in XML. Yes. Yeah. No, okay, so that's a very different question, which is, should you should store data in XML format or not? And the answer is, some database people say, we'll keep it in relational databases and support this front end for people, you know, who want XML data out. And then there is also native XML databases, where they essentially a priori convert all their data into XML format and store the data itself in database format, in XML format. And so they actually support, you know, very good indexing and retrieval for XML tuples. Remember, we already talked about how when you index XML, you know, from an IR point of view, you need to actually index not for each word, you have to index all possible paths under which that word occurs. Ideas like that also have to be done for XML. But again, this is a question of, you know, when you are in Eskimo land, would you think that you should still think in English and then convert your answers to Eskimos, or would you want to just become an Eskimo? Would you want to go native? Okay, maybe you will decide to go native after a while. Okay, those also are research questions in this slide, actually. It turns out this slide is also, it's like a big issue of why database people, you know, the connection between databases and XML, and what can database guys do because XML standard is available. Okay. Again, if you are interested in this sort of thing in this course, you could look at each and semi-structured databases.
Because when we are keeping XML format, we are also keeping the data in the database.
No. Here, actually, I did not. You know, this is in relational database. Until the query was asked, I never converted into SQL. And when I converted the query into SQL, it was run on the relational data. And the relational data output was then converted into XML. It's not necessary. Yes?
Where's the demand for this arbitrary XML query?
That's a very good question. There's demand in Sigmod, which is a database conference. People publish those papers. But I don't quite know. In fact, the rest of these lectures will try to put this in perspective. Okay, so this is, if everybody agrees on the schema, then I can put an XML front end and everything is happy. Okay, but then I've been mentioning that if I asked for books with one writer and this guy only has authors, no writers, what is this guy supposed to do? Even after conversion of XQuery into SQL, which is a syntactic conversion, what are they supposed to do about this heterogeneity of the naming? One calls, you know, writer, one calls author. Okay. Now, that brings us to the next part, which is semantic web standards, and which essentially try to say, so the idea is, so an answer to your question is there a demand for combining multiple different sources and, you know, provide one single type of query? Of course, yes. Is it going to be done this way? That means people write an XQuery query and all databases agree. Maybe if in fact everybody has the same XML schema. Okay, but if they don't, what do you do? Very fact that you have fields doesn't mean those fields mean the same thing for two different records. Okay, and so this thing is sort of a rehash for you because I've mentioned this last class, but it's worth mentioning because outside of this class, you know, many people in the world think XML is a semantic standard, that XML is about meaning. If you ever see somebody like that, you know, slap them once and run away, of course, before they hit you. But, you know, but the point is XML is a purely syntactic standard. Just because you can make a grammatically correct English sentence doesn't mean that you are actually speaking meaningful English sentences. That's the reason for that sentence. It's colorless green ideas sleep furiously. It's a perfectly good, grammatically correct English sentence. You can tell your four-year-old niece or nephew, instead of this, if you say meh, 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 they don't know what to say, what you're saying. Whereas if you said this, they will actually put their hand and say, what the heck are you trying to say? You know, you almost look like you should be meaning something, but it has no meaning. Why did they think you almost look like you might be meaning something? Because you said a grammatically correct sentence. But semantically, there is no world where a colorless idea happens to have the green color. And, you know, let's not even get into why they are sleeping furiously, okay? This is a classic quote from, Noam Chomsky, about whom we'll get into some other time, but essentially, it differentiates grammar from meaning, okay? When you got XML, you can make sentences that are grammatically correct. But the sentences may mean completely different things. Remember, there is a different quote from Alice in Wonderland. I don't know whether the latest Alice in Wonderland had this quote, but the true one has, which where I think one of the characters says that when I say a word, I intend it to mean exactly what I intend it to mean. So it's the kind of situation where I'll say a word and will impose a meaning on it, even if you don't share that meaning. Then I can say pretty much anything. I can say you're a phony and mean, I think I'm complimenting you and you're trying to hit me. Okay, but I decided, I said phony in a good way, and I thought it was a compliment for you. Okay, so that is essentially the meaning issue. And so the last thing I'll just show today, and when we come back, we'll basically talk about semantic web standards, which try to say we can standardize meaning if everybody were to use the XML syntax to agree upon the predicates in a logical language, the predicates and their arity and the interconnection between predicates in a logical language. Okay, that's what we'll do next class, but let me show you this, which presumably can be read by some people, not me, you know. And so if you have a non-Chinese CPU, then this is how, you know, this file looks probably not particularly meaningful. You don't even know whether it's grammatically correct. It looks like it's written in something, okay? So for your machine, for your computer, a normal web page looks like this. You put XML syntax, XML standard for a machine, now it says this is name begin, name end, this is education begin, education end, work begin, work end, private begin, private end, this whole thing is CV. Actually, the last time I showed this, you know, one of the Chinese students said that this is not even a CV, it is apparently something else altogether. But, you know, how do you guys know? He knows, but, you know, he's going to keep quiet. Okay, so now the point is the fact that this is field one, this is field two, this is field three. In fact, you may have written education, word, private, and you're feeling good that now I finally explained to the bozos here who don't understand this language that this is CV-ness, this is education-ness, and so on. But if you don't also know English, right? You also don't know English, then it sort of looks like this to you. So there was some stuff, and then there is some fields, and this is in Greek here, Greek here, Greek here, Greek here. And you don't know what those fields mean either. Okay? You just know that there are fields. There is a piece here, there is a piece here, there is a sub-piece has structure to it. Okay? And then, now there is one, if all the schemas, assuming, now why do you say, why would this be useful? Why would marking like this would be useful? Well, it will be useful if there are a whole bunch of CVs. All of them have the same structure. You are worker ants. You don't know what I'm asking. I just gave you a bunch of these, and I told you, give me from all of these, you know, the bag of all the fields of this form, omega, o, pi, chi. Okay? You should be able to do it. You'll go here and so this must be this part here, this must be this part here, so you combine all of them into a big bag and give it to me. Without knowing what you're doing, you're able to help me. Okay, because everybody has the same schema. All the files have the same schema. However, if a different guy starts using a CV with different tags, now if I say, give me all the names of the people listed in the CVs, where name basically happened to be just this field. Now the name has a different tag now, so you don't even know that those two are the same. Okay, so somebody then has to say that this here is the same as this here. So I just come and tell you, you don't need to understand Greek, you don't need to understand English, you don't need to understand Chinese. Okay, you here is a table of correspondences. This thingy is this thingy, this thingy is this thingy. And for each file, I tell you where those thingies are because of the markup. And I'll give you queries on, you know, the central one of the markups, and then you will be able to convert them and answer queries. The question is, is there a standard I can make such that I can give you that kind of information? I can say, this is the same as this. That's what I want to say. Okay? And before you run away, let me just show you the last slide, mostly to get you back next class, not that it helps. We'll get here at the end of next class, but I want to give it away first. Okay, so here are two databases, both written with the Semantic Web Standards. Here is a database with a camera, and the fields in the camera are written in something called the RDF standard that we'll talk about next class. Okay? And this, according to the RDF standards, the Olympus, it has the following optics, the lens, shutter speed, etc. Here is another one. Instead, you know, this one called the camera SLR. This one called it camera. Okay? And it has separate, you know, optics and lens, and their fields are slightly different, I believe. Okay, here is focal length. Here is size/size. You read this, if you are a camera file, you would say, oh, yeah, these are the same cameras. So if I ask you, give me all the cameras about this much focal length from both the databases, you can do it. But your machine can't do it because they have different schemas. So if I were to provide an integrator that looks at both the databases and answers queries on the set of cameras, I need to provide you a way of mapping which says SLR is the same as camera, size is the same as focal length. And here is a little OWL, O-W-L, OWL ontology mapping standard, which is essentially saying in this particular case, in this verbose way, that aperture is the same as f-stop, and similarly SLR is the same as camera. So this is sort of combining predicates into logical forms. So if this predicate is true, then this predicate will also be true. Okay, that is the OWL standard, and this is actually also being called RDF schema in the past. That is the schema for the RDF tuples, except it's a semantic schema. It is providing the background knowledge that connects this focal length to this size. The dream of Semantic Web is you guys will stop doing what you're doing, learn these standards, so that whenever you have complete freedom in doing your databases any which way, as long as you are a good citizen and provide this mapping. then I can write an integrator which will connect all the derivatives. So we'll talk about what these standards are next class, and then the class after that we'll say who's going to write these very verbose descriptions, and then talk about how to do it ourselves, you know, if at all, even if it is faulty way. Okay?